name is Jeff Newell. I'm the clinical sales manager here at OrtoPed. Today we have a great show lined up. We have James Fansworth and Ted Varley of Covey, who have designed the Nexus Hand, and we're going to be discussing the future of myoelectric devices. Ted has been in the field for over 15 years. I've known Ted for, I don't know how long, Ted, quite a while, way back. I don't even want to date it because it'll make us both sound old. For sure. Anyways, I knew Ted way back when he was involved with Steeper. And since then, and he was one of the key developers with regards to the bionic hand. Since then, he has set up his own company called Covey. A little bit of a touchy name at this time or a day, but we all know what it's about. So it's the company's name is Covey, and the hand is called Nexus. Along with Ted today, we have James. James is working out of the San Antonio office. He's a bilateral upper extremity amputee, so he understands all the challenges that amputees face on a daily basis. We're going to talk to these fellows today and just get some of their ideas and thoughts of where myoelectrics has come from and where it's headed. So thanks again, gentlemen, for joining us. And we'll get right into it. Well, first off, what do you think has pushed the innovation of myoelectric devices just in the last 10 years? I've noticed, you know, I see a lot of customers on a daily basis, and things have dramatically changed in 10 years. There's things that we're doing now that we would never even have anticipated 10 years ago or even thought that was going to be possible.
I think there's sort of two separate fields which are driving this sort of the innovation. The first thing is the technology of the devices that we can use. So the components that we use. There's a lot of prosthetics built on other industries. We're still a little bit small to do true R&D and sort of blue sky research. So a lot of the technologies that these hands and legs are built on, military or aerospace and other industries, and we would basically borrow their innovations. So some of the technologies that have been coming through in the last 10 years, battery technology has moved on incredibly. So mobile phone batteries, when we sort of set out on the bionic journey, they were insufficiently powerful to, they were thin and they were small, but they're insufficiently powerful to drive a high active device such as a multi-articulated hand. But the advent of drones and compact domestic drones, the batteries now have come on leaps and bounds, and there's now incredibly compact batteries that can discharge the whole battery within a minute. And this is all about getting the phone off the ground. And to be able to deliver that level of current, it's the same current draw that you would need for gripping something very firmly. So battery technology has really, really moved on. Mm-hmm. The thing that's moved on is the size of the motors. So there's quite a lot of complex modeling. But for example, in 2009, when we were working on the first bionic large, the small wouldn't have been possible. But then if you go fast forward to 2015, the motors then became available, the same sort of power density, much improved power density, but in a much smaller package. And you then get a hand that you can, like the bionic small, that you can fit five motors in, and it's incredibly small and incredibly light, but is, it's delivering the same performance, if not better performance, from 2009, which was much, much larger motors. So I think there's definitely the technology that's available. And then in addition to that, there's the tools that are available to the people who are both designing and fitting these devices. Computer-aided design has become incredibly user-friendly, and the surfacing element within that has enabled some very organic-looking designs. But also within clinic, you've got the ability to be able to scan remnant limbs and now 3D print sockets. So I think the tools have also moved on a great deal, which has sped up the development process as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one point that I noticed, or the one thing that I noticed way back when Bionic came out, you know, Bionic hand that came out first was the large hand. And we were waiting and waiting and waiting for the smaller hands to come about. But you guys at Colby have been able to start with the small hand, which is probably going to be the number one selling hand as compared to a large hand. So I think that's ingenious that you guys have been able to start from the small and work your way the opposite way. The other point, go ahead. The other thing that you mentioned too, which is true, I see, well, in the materials field of the orthotics and prosthetic area, is that a lot of the materials we use, we take from other fields. As you said, we're so small that we can't afford to do all this research and development. We need to pull from other areas and see where they fit into our needs.
Yeah, I was just on your point about the sizing. This was a mistake that we sort of made. I think a lot of people make that mistake, thinking that it's the 50 percentile American male size, which is going to be the most common. You think it's men having accidents, and that's going to be your biggest market. And it wasn't until we developed the small hand that we realized that we'd got it completely wrong. The small hand was way more popular than the two larger sizes. And when you think about logically, people in North America and Europe, we're quite big people. Most women have much smaller hands than men. So you've got 50% of the population there already that's been knocked off. And if you've got large hands now, there's been a point in your life when you've had smaller hands. So then you start thinking, well, actually, the small market is much, much larger than the larger markets, definitely. Mm-hmm. The other point of view, the challenge of starting with a big design and then making it smaller and then making it smaller again, I think we learned that as well with the Bionic process, that technically the large and the, but we got to the point with the medium that you couldn't get those motors in a smaller package space, and then to design small, it was either some sort of reducing the number of motors because at that point the motors weren't available, or wait until new technology came along. And that was kind of the path we went through to, we ended up waiting and working very closely with a motor manufacturer when their new tech came. And we were the first people to adopt that, that motor side. So it's a lot easier when you look back and go, oh yeah, we'll just space the motors out and we'll just add air in between. That's kind of what we've done with this design.
Well, I can remember back, the development of the Bionic hand, it was so ingenious with a multi-articulating hand that I fit many patients, primarily women, with the medium hand. It was far too big, but it outweighed the technology. This was so ingenious that they've never seen anything like this before, that you could have a hand that would finger point instead of just a tripod grip. And, you know, no matter what I said, let's just hold off a bit, let's wait for the small hand. Nope, they wanted it now just because of the technology.
Yeah, it was quite a radical. Yeah, you take it for granted now because there's lots of multi-articulated hands, but yeah, back then it was pretty radical.
Well, when I first was introduced to it, it was way back at an AOPA meeting in Chicago, and I was introduced to this hand. I sort of had ideas of what was coming down the pipe, but because of my relationship with you guys at Steeper, but nothing was ever ultimately said. And when I did see it, the hand moved very, very slow compared to what it does now. But I thought, this is just amazing. I couldn't believe my eyes. And you know, it's come a long way since then. What do you think is the biggest ongoing research of the upper extremity prosthetic area that has become so exciting? What's the biggest thing you think going on now that will really move amputees?
I think control systems where we're going to be seeing the sort of the research. That's kind of very exciting to get some more degrees of freedom and more from the user to be able to control these devices is quite exciting. There's lots of it. We've developed the COVID hand with a CAN bus, a digital CAN bus. So the ability to be able for research groups to be able to digitally control each finger, and also we've put sensors in the fingertips. So it's kind of like a chassis that they can build on. Because we're mindful that at the moment, the majority of users are using sort of direct control, just two electrode sites with an end close, which is very reliable. But there's so much more capability of the hand. It's just making it user-friendly and making it easy to use, which is the key. So pattern recognition is also very exciting, but we need some more accessible. We need to like replace the direct control with a new system for everyone. I think that's going to be quite exciting. And then some of the sort of haptic feedback, because that's another area where prosthetics is pretty poor if we're honest, and you don't realize quite how much you rely on the sense of touch. So I think that area of people working on feeding that back to the user is also going to be quite exciting. And I think it'll be like going from dial-up to broadband when it came from the telecommunications industry. Hopefully we'll make that big leap.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see you mentioned pattern recognition, and I'm quite involved in quite a number of pattern recognition systems. And I can see that has really been a helpful hand on the myoelectric componentry side. I fit quite a number of above elbow patients that some of these devices now with a multi-articulating hand, an electric elbow or electric wrist, all these things were very difficult for an amputee to get all them functioning with just a two-site system. Now they're being able to generate all these. Okay. What limitations have kept myoelectric devices from advancing further than what they are today? What do you think is slowing this down, do you think? Or what do you think has deteriorated a little bit?
It's a sort of a double-edged sword, really. But the market size obviously limits the amount of investment that's going into these type of devices. But obviously, that you'd mean that the more people needed these devices. So I think we did well for the size of the market that we are. Battery tech is coming, and it's, I think the main limitation at the moment is sort of a bit of collaboration. I think we need to work more. We need some sort of international standards on a digital bus system, I think. And so lots of different companies can be working on different elements, but we know that this is how we're going to all talk. And then sort of an international standard for a wrist interface, I think, would be a real help. Mm-hmm. Because some of the people face trying to make systems work together. The prosthetist wants to use these electrodes, these batteries, this hand and this wrist. It would be nice if we had an agreed standard to say, yep, this is what you need to engineer these two. This is what you need to engineer these two. And you know that the whole lot will work together. So I think that holds us back. But for the market size, I think there's been some reasonable development over the last 10 years.
Yeah, I agree totally. Sorry. I agree totally with you, what you're saying, getting all the different suppliers working together. I see the same thing with lower extremity as well. It's very rare that you go in and see a patient or a prosthetist and say, okay, here's what we have to offer. You got to use all these together. They want to use whatever hand they want. They want to use whatever electrodes from a different manufacturer. You know, they want to be able to have that choice. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, just an anecdote. I used to work in the car industry, and basically what we used to do is just go to the competition and swap car keys. Nothing was said for a week. And you'd go back on Monday and swap car keys back. Yeah. And it's kind of, We could just do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. James, what do you as an amputee, what do you think have been the big game changers for you from, let's say, 10 years ago, when myoelectrics was really just sort of merging into the prosthetic field back then? You know, it was quite a great revelation, but you know, things, as we mentioned earlier, things have changed so much. What do you think is one of the big key elements that has really made your life easier and be able to function more in the community?
Well, you know, in recent times, there have been so many changes with technology. I mean, the older style hands really were, I mean, it was more of a cosmetic option than a functional option. You could grab onto things, but nowadays, I mean, you go shopping at the grocery store, you've got the self checkouts with the, you know, the touch screens, you've got, you know, your cell phone, your tablets, and being bilateral, I really need to have the use of, you know, more than just a curled up hand on the end of my arm to, you know, use all these functions, and of course grabbing the credit card and all of that. So it's really important now that the hand, you know, adapts to today's technology out there. So that's probably the most important thing for me.
Okay. Do you guys think from me being out in the field, I see sort of a change with the amputees. They're more, before they wanted it to be hidden. They didn't want to be seen as an amputee. They want to, you know, keep it quiet. They want to look as natural as possible. Now what I'm seeing is that amputees realize, well, you know what, even with the technology that we have today, we can't hide it. So let's make it look really high tech. Let's make it look really cool. I want to show this thing off. Are you guys seeing that as well?
So so when I started on the journey in prosthetics, I wanted to make the sort of golden rule to the design team was to try and make a hand as desirable for someone who's got two hands and they just want one, but they don't know what they're going to do with it. Mm-hmm. That's the level we wanted to get prosthetic hands to. And I think with Bionic and the Nexus hand, I don't think we're far away from that. Definitely seen a shift away from the sort of skin tone cosmetic covers to something more radical. And you get a functional benefit, definitely with the multi-articulated hands, because the glove is a really technically challenging thing, and it will look baggy on the palm. It won't look, there's some fantastic stuff, but it doesn't look realistic. Humans were naturally wired to look for things that don't look right. And there's a thing called sort of uncanny valley, which things like the cosmetic gloves fall into. They don't look like the other side. So, and they also affect the function. So with the newer designs, we're more function focused. The things work better. But also, I think it's also a statement of accepting what is normal and what sort of ownership over the device. And it starts a dialogue between the user and the general public. If you've got something that looks like you're trying to hide, people aren't going to talk to you about it. Whereas if you've got some radical carbon fiber, you know, like iRobot looking hand, after a while, people are going to open a dialogue with you. And I've seen the benefits of that from users who have gone from a very sort of angry person, the particular guy I'm talking about, he went from a very sort of angry person, sort of isolated, not happy at all, to someone in 18 months' time was doing after dinner speaking all over the world. And all that was down to was the hand he was wearing. It was pretty nuts, the transformation of his sort of mindset. And his after dinner speaking was all about getting technology out there and the benefit that it had for him. So I think it is both a functional and a sort of a psychological benefit to having something that says, this is a prosthetic. This is me.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great that this big wave of change is coming about. You know, I've been around quite a while as you have, Ted, and you know, I've seen a dramatic change in the way that society accepts this now, and not accepting it, but are so interested and intrigued by it. You know, because it is so high tech, and that's where our minds are set now. Is anything high tech, we want to see. Look at our phones. How long do you keep a phone for? You want to have the greatest and latest phone as soon as it comes out. You know, and I think people are viewing this the same way. One of the big differences that I've had many comments on with the Nexus Hand is the way you guys have integrated the silicone glove into that hand. And as you said, one of the big hurdles with a myoelectric hand is the glove. You know, a myoelectric hand can go out the door of a lab, and in literally minutes, that glove is torn and patients unhappy, all that. But you guys have been pretty ingenious in the way you've implemented having the silicone where it needs to be silicone and rigid where it needs to be rigid. And then on top of that, it just gives that really, really high tech look. You know, the first hand I showed was actually to a 13-year-old boy out west, and it was the white version. He saw that, and he said, first thing that came out of his mouth was Luke Skywalker. And that was the hand for him.
Yes.
Okay. It didn't matter if it could do anything. That was the hand he wanted, and that's the hand he's going with. So it's really exciting to see these changes, and to see that manufacturers like yourself are really looking at the amputee to see what do they need, what do they want, how can I make their life better. I just think it's great. You know, I've shown the Covey hand and a good number of them, and I still get excited when I see the look on their face, you know. And I think that's what sometimes is lost in this field, that we forget ultimately this is for the amputee, the end user. And you know, okay. Where do you think, just, we're almost going to wrap up here, but what do you think, where is technology going to be on the myoelectric side within the next 10 years? Where do you think we're headed? What do you think is something that is reachable, that we can really think, you know what, this is going to happen in the next 10 years?
So I think we've definitely got to the pattern recognition is going to have to become like the new standard. Mm-hmm. And getting more signals from these, we've discussed that. I think tactile feedback, I think, has got the potential to really make a big difference as well. There's some interesting research going on there. And then I think definitely as much compliance in the devices as possible. I think there's some quite exciting developments in 3D printing metals that we could do some really organic organic forms and really customize for a particular user. And also there's things known as shape memory metals. Instead of using motors, you can you apply a voltage to a metal and it changes length. So you're getting almost to the function of how the organic hand works. It's not quite got the elongation yet, but they're coming. And then they're super lightweight. So that could give you, allow you to spread the fingers and also give it separate articulation of the fingers, which would be quite cool. But yeah, it's a continual improvement. And I think, I don't think there's going to be from the terminal device, it's like a radical change. A lot of the stuff we've done with the Nexus is building on what's gone in the past and in sort of integrating more and more usability. Things like the flex wrist, we've seen amazing feedback from that. Just the ability to be able to not have to cognitively think, I need to put the hand in this position to do this particular job. Just because it's spring-loaded and super short, you can just use your body weight to grab a door handle or a shopping cart. So it sounds simple, but it makes a massive difference. we were doing early prototyping in sort of 2018 and 19 with this hand. And they weren't very good, if I'm brutally honest, Jeff. They were failing.
I appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, we were prototypes, but the people who were testing them were going back onto their B-Bionics and saying it was the wrist that they missed the most. That spring-loaded wrist for all sorts of daily activities really stops a lot of shoulder compensation. And things like the thumb tap just really simplifies the control. Things like that, I think we're just going to do a lot more iterative improvements. And I think the speed of development, because there's so much more competition in the market now, I think we've all got to move a bit quicker and be a bit more responsive. That's going to be the exciting thing over the next 10 years. I think these changes, people won't be waiting such a long time. Every year there'll be something new that'll add on to the technology that's already there.
Okay, anything you want to add to that, James?
No, I think he covered most everything. I definitely, one thing that stood out to me that he was talking about was, you know, the reaction that the public gets. It's made it a lot more kind of accepting for me. I definitely, the design of the Nexus hand is what really drew me to this company. I just, as soon as I saw it, I was intrigued, and things just kind of took off from there, and here I am. But I think we're on something really good here, and I'm really excited to see where things go from here.
Okay, great. Okay, with that, I'd like to just thank everybody who joined in today, and I'd really like to thank Ted and James from Covey and the Nexus Hand for stopping by and talking to us and sharing their thoughts and ideas of where they see myoelectrics heading in the future. Of course, if you have a topic or a show that you'd like for future episodes, you can email us at positiveoutcomes@ortoped.ca, and we can see what we can do with that. New episodes are released every other Thursday at positiveoutcomes.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive Outcomes is a production of Ortoped ULC in conjunction with other partners, produced by Jonathan Stone, Frederick Sauvé, and has been hosted by Jeff Newell and Simon Beals. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.